Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Jealousy is just not green. Yeah, it's a rainbow. Yeah, yeah. Do you get what I mean? Like it's actually a rainbow of different colors and emotions. There's your insecurity. Yeah. There's what you feel like you lack.
Yeah.
There's what you feel like that tells you about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
There's also sometimes a deep sadness and a grieving and a disappointment.
Yeah. Like I think especially for like minoritized groups or groups that have experienced some kind of marginalization from society, there is this sense of scarcity. And I think for women, there's competition because there's a feeling that not everybody can succeed at that particular level, right?
You've prayed with this person and now they've got what you guys were praying for. And it kind of triggered in my mind that sometimes our prayers are conditional, right? Mm. Which is God bless my friend only if you bless me first.
Good. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hello and welcome to the Two My Sisters podcast. I'm Courtney.
And I'm Renee, and we are your online sisters and hosts of the Two My Sisters podcast.
We are all about promoting the wellness, growth and development of a community of sisters around the world.
And in today's episode, we're going to be talking about keeping up with the Joneses. Mm. Carrying on with the theme of last week's episode where we were diving deep into our friendship and talking about some of the hurdles that can come up as a result of being long-term besties. I thought it would be a great opportunity for us to touch base on comparison, jealousy, and kind of just go deep into it, especially because it's something that the girlies have been going through time after time after time. So yeah, that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Let's talk about it.
But before we do that, we of course have got some housekeeping.
Yes, we do.
First of all, again, a major, major thank you. Guys, we are recording this in advance, but the tickets for the South Africa live show
sold out baby.
And guys, we are just so overwhelmed and so over the moon, and we are so thankful for every single person that bought a ticket.
For
not
real.
Just bought a ticket, but also bought a ticket for a sister, because the way some of you were copping like four or five tickets at the same time, they said we're bringing
the whole gang.
Beautiful to see. So thank you from the bottom of our hearts, and a major, major thank you to Sorted Chalet, the entire team. Specific shout outs to Vedette, Edwina. You guys have been holding it down and we are super excited for this experience. Ooh. By this time, you might be seeing some vlogs, some videos, some pictures, and I trust them believe that the girls are having a good time in South Africa.
Sure.
So shout out to all of our South Africa sisters as well that are coming to the retreat and the live show.
Yes, and our book came out on the 1st of February. If you are not in the loop, we released a paperback version of To My Sisters, A Guide to Building Lifelong Friendships, which actually now has a new title.
Hello, somebody.
Unlocking the Power of Female Friendships, because it's important, it's powerful. And so if you haven't checked that out already, it is available at all major retailers of books, as well as Amazon.
I'm screaming. She's at all.
Of
everywhere,
books.
Everywhere that you want to get it. Get it, the power. I was thinking of like a gospel song when you said that. I was like, the power, the glory, all of that jazz. So please, please support your girls. Get a copy of that paperback.
Mm-hmm.
Galentine's is coming around. So if you want to gift somebody special,
why not?
Or even if you are a guy that is secretly listening to this and you have a girl that's on your agenda, what better way of surprising her for Valentine's Day than giving her a copy of our book to show that you're down with the girls?
For real. It's a good
you're
advice.
Glowing and growing too.
Good advice.
So definitely support your girls. Get a copy of the book.
Yeah.
We love you. Thank you to everybody that has gotten a copy of that hardback. Listen, we love you guys. And it shows. It shows that you love us. So we appreciate you so much.
For real.
I think that's it for the housekeeping.
Yeah.
Without further ado, let's jump into the ding, ding, ding.
Dilemma.
Because a sister is in need. Alrighty. Hey, sisters.
Hey, sweetie.
I hope you're both shining well in God's grace.
Oh, we're trying.
It can never be said enough times how world-changing your work is for us women.
Thank you.
My dilemma is the absence of fulfilling friendships. Mm-hmm. For context, I used to belong to a friendship group in secondary school. We grew up together and have many wonderful, idyllic memories and experiences. In short, I felt so complete and fulfilled when I was with them. My life was abound with joy, love, and energy. Unfortunately, this friendship ended at the start of university. Our friendship became toxic and I outgrew them. They would make insensitive, harsh comments and I didn't feel celebrated or appreciated. After many instances of forgiveness and futile attempts of reconciliation, our friendship ended for good. I understand why God removed them and I did meet much better friends at university, but no one seems to come close to them. No one else can generate the same comfort that homegirls can. It's hard to form a similar intimacy with anyone else. Looking around me, it seems like everyone else's home friends survived time, so I feel alone in this issue. There's something so cosmic about a friendship where you have grown together across a number of years and places. The absence of this leaves me so dispirited. I'm scared that I'll never feel as fulfilled with anyone else than I did with them. Is it possible to find a friendship that can reach the same depths despite not sharing a deep history? I'd love to hear your thoughts and advice. Thank you so much. With so much love, a sister in yearning.
Oh, that's such a good dilemma. I think a lot of people can actually relate. Though you said that the people that you have around you seem to have maintained those friendships that have a long history, I actually think a lot of us can relate to the fact that not every relationship, say from our childhood or high school, actually survives transitioning into that kind of adult stage of life, whether it be going to university / college or just moving into adulthood, like work life. And so you're definitely not alone in this fact. However, I think you need to stop putting such a high expectation on the new relationships that you come across. It's very hard to replicate something. No matter what, the people that you meet are not going to be your friends from high school. You're going to have to build new memories. You can't try and recreate what was. You just have to hold on to the fond memories that existed. And if you are really longing for those friendships, it's not just, I guess, the intimacy, it could be specific to those friends. And so I would say, I know you probably have tried to reconcile, but if there is another shot at reconciling, just let your friends know in all vulnerability, I actually miss you guys. Like, I miss the dynamic that we had. I don't know if you guys feel the same, but it just feels like nothing else basically compares. And I would really love for us to just try to be friends and show up for them and see if, you know, there is an opportunity for you to build that intimacy again, starting maybe from scratch. Obviously, you can't act like nothing has happened. So, you know, just try and show up here and there and then see if it progresses to being another intimate relationship. But I would say the reason why you're probably feeling very disappointed is because it feels like just nothing compares to what you used to have. And I'm sorry to say, everything else may not be the exact same. It will be different. And that's not to say you can't cultivate the same level of intimacy with a new person. However, it's not going to happen straight away, but it's definitely not impossible. And also, it's not going to look the exact same. They're not going to banter like your old friends bantered, but they may have a different kind of humor, which is altogether funny. Do you get what I mean? To the same level of intimacy. So I think build new memories with people that you can build intimate relationships on. Give yourself the chance to actually go out with them, do new things with them, which allow you to reminisce on the life that you're building or the friendship that you're building with them. Treat them like individuals and don't project the, oh, but my old friends used to do this. Okay, but they're not your old friends. They are new people and this is a new friendship. So I would say, hold on to the fond memories you have with your old friends. If you can rebuild that bridge, then rebuild that bridge. But with your new friends, realize that you're working from scratch and you only really get out what you put in. And if you feel like you're resisting putting in a lot because you're kind of like, I wish I was with my old friends, it kind of makes sense why you're not building that intimacy. Like, imagine if you were in a romantic relationship and your partner kept coming to you like, me and my ex used to do this, me and my ex used to do that, or me and my ex were like this. It's going to be really hard for them to build a relationship with you. And so I think treat your new friendships like that as well. Like, it's a new slate. These are new people. and they can show themselves to you in different ways. I do understand that finding really, really good tight friends sometimes takes time. Like it really does. Let's just be very honest. However, it's not impossible. There are people out there who can give you that same level of intimacy. You just need to give them a fresh chance. That's what I would say. How about you?
Yeah, no, I love that. I think it's the pragmatism, right? Of you have a specific dynamic that you've really enjoyed with your old friends, but now you're kind of caught in a situation where those friendships have either broken off or you feel that you cannot pursue them anymore at this particular juncture. And I think it's very important to recognize that and reckon with that and acknowledge that you will be starting afresh either in old friendships or in new friendships, and that can be tough. And whilst it's nice to have that old dynamic and it's nice to kind of reminisce on those old times, I think it's also worth pondering upon what has actually caused these friendships to really break up and what has caused you to think or believe that God has really called you to remove yourself from that situation. I think it can be very easy to romanticize the good times while also being quite sober-minded about what really happened and how these things ended, in the same way that in a romantic relationship, right, it's always easy to romanticize, oh, you know, when I was with my ex, we had all of these great times, but there were also very bad times. And these were quite significant things that you mentioned, you know, the insensitivity. I'm not too sure how much you addressed it with your old friends and how much that contributed to the breakdown of that friendship. If you didn't address it, it may be worth, again, going back to those old friends and saying, hey, I do miss our dynamic, but these are some things that we need to work on. Because as much as you enjoyed the old dynamic of your old friendships, every friendship has phases and seasons and will have to mature and develop as time goes on. So it's really important to recognize that even with your old friendships, that dynamic was very specific to that time and context. And now moving forward, there will be changes to that friendship or that dynamic, whether you choose to pursue it or not. So I think it's very, very important for you to try and deal with those issues that you had within your old friendships and your old relationships, whether that ends up in you guys being friends again or not, is beside the point. But I think it's important to at least get some closure there if you haven't already pursued it. And then, as you were saying, in terms of your new friendships, it's really important to honor the fact that these are new relationships. You have to build from ground zero. And as hard as that can be, it can also be fruitful and fulfilling. So at least now you've learned the lesson from your old friendships. These are the things that I really value in friendships, and these are the things that I don't want to tolerate in my friendships. So seeing this as a clean slate to build that intimacy and build a solid foundation with new people and new friends is actually a great opportunity, because it means that you have the chance to kind of set the principles or set the foundation of that friendship moving forward. And as much as there's comfort in, you know, the old season, there's also so much possibility, fruitfulness and joy in a new season. So I think really embracing, this is my opportunity to really craft my friendships the way that I would like to really co-collaborate with new people in my life. And I think it's a wonderful opportunity. It's really daunting as well. And I think it's about being realistic about the levels of intimacy that you can get to within a finite amount of time, but then also seeing the beauty and the newness, right? These are the memories and the experiences and the times that you're going to reminisce on with those friends in a couple of years. Yeah. And trust me, years go by real quickly.
Very quickly.
I feel like as we're getting older, I'm just like, rah, time is running like a bear, boy.
Absolutely.
So all of this, things are fresh. I'm telling you, you'll get 1-2 years in, these people are too close to me. You're too familiar. You're all up in my space. So yeah, I think take the pressure off, really think about how you want to pursue these new friendships and see this as a really great opportunity to start afresh, because I ain't going to lie to you, the older you get, the less opportunities you get to start afresh in this particular way.
Absolutely.
So make the most of it, sis.
Yeah, man.
And take your time.
You do find friends, though.
100%.
Like having those close friends is just, it's unmatched. So yeah, just invest in those and see where it gets you.
Hashtag so platonic. Girl, we are sending lots of love. We are praying for you. We hope that those new friendships will blossom into something quite beautiful,
amen,
intimate.
Amen to that.
Super platonic.
Amen to that.
And also praying for you and your old friendships too. Mm. Irrespective of whether you find closure or not, I hope that and pray that both parties will find some kind of closure and will be able to move on in a meaningful and joyous manner.
Yeah.
Love that.
So sending lots of love. But sisters, if that resonated with you, if you have any experience of, you know, going through any friendship breakups, or, you know, you're in the season of trying to find new friends and you're like, I've got some tips and tricks and things that have worked for me, please, please, please drop it like it's hot in the comments below over on YouTube. You can also do that on Spotify, which is super exciting.
We love to see it.
We want to see the comments. And this might actually be a great reminder to, A, please, 5 stars. Thank you. Rate us 5 stars. We will not like fight you or anything. We just want to compel you to rate us 5 stars. And also share with a sister. The sisterhood is growing. So we want this to be the biggest global sisterhood movement that the world has ever seen. So we can't do that. Recruit the troops, man. Recruit the troops. Speaking of troops, warfare, fighting, all that jazz. Segueing into the conversation of today, keeping up with the Joneses, comparison, jealousy, envy, all the words that we use. Now, I wanted to talk about this because obviously we talked about it within the context of our friendship last week.
Yeah.
But it's also one of the defining chapters slash a really big theme that we talk about within our book, right? And I think when we often talk about friendships and comparison and all that kind of stuff, we can often talk about it as being the object of comparison or the object of jealousy, right? Like, girls be envious of me, the girls be comparing me to them, all that jazz. Kind of like when we were talking about monitoring spirits and all that kind of jazz in the TMS hot takes.
Yeah.
But what happens when, more broadly, we are dealing with comparison, we are dealing with envy and jealousy, especially because envy and jealousy seem like very harsh and ugly words
to use.
Nobody wants to be like, oh, you know, I'm the envious friend, or like, oh, I'm jealous. Comparison is light in comparison, but when you say, oh, I'm jealous, it's like, whoa, there's an evil spirit on the inside of you. So I actually wanted to open with, why do you think that a lot of people struggle with coming to terms with the fact that they are either envious or jealous? Like, what is difficult about owning up to the fact that you may be jealous of, like, either a friend or like people that you see online doing really well? Mm-hmm. Why is that tough?
I think, I love that you started with that, because I think it's easy to identify something in others and very hard to recognize it in yourself. I think one, like you said, it's quite ugly words. They have such negative connotations to them. You kind of feel like if you say you're envious or you're jealous, one, you're admitting, ooh, you're dealing with a really ugly feeling.
Yeah.
Or that you are a bad person. And I think because we conflate the two of like, oh, she's jealous, she's envious. It's like what you were saying about female friendships. There's so much jealousy, there's so much envy. So we associate it with like really negative people you should stay away from. Danger. Do you get what I mean? Like, there is danger here. And so to admit that you're feeling that within yourselves feels like you're saying you're a bad person or you're just altogether rotten to the core, when that's not necessarily the case. I think the reason why people also hesitate to recognize that this is envy or this is jealousy is when we are experiencing it within ourselves, we recognize just how complex those feelings are, right? It's not simply a, I want what you have. It arises so many different emotions, feelings, insecurities that can be very hard to even verbalize and recognize. And I think the reason why we're so quick to throw out, oh, this person is envious and they're jealous and let me just cut them off, is because we don't identify or empathize with how complex that feeling is, that it doesn't just arise overnight and it isn't just coming from one place, right? Yeah. It's so murky. And so when we feel it ourselves, we're now confronted with the complexity of that feeling. So jealousy is not just... Jealousy is just not green. It's a rainbow. Do you get what I mean? Like, it's actually a rainbow of different colors and emotions. There's your insecurity. There's what you feel like you lack. There's what you feel like that tells you about yourself. There's also sometimes a deep sadness and a grieving and a disappointment. But then there's also a mix of sometimes positive feelings. Like, I'm actually really excited for my friend, but it's kind of shrouded by this sadness that I don't have it. And it's not that I want what they have. It's that I just want something for me, right? And so all of these things layer on top of each other to make a very colorful picture. And because we recognize those things, sometimes it's like there's depression, there's anxiety, yeah. there's panic, there's all of these things. So because we recognize that this is actually a myriad of emotions, it's hard to now pinpoint that as envy. Do you know what I mean? Because we know the complexity of what we're dealing with. So we may struggle to say like, no, we may find ourselves saying, no, I'm not envious of you. I actually don't know what I'm feeling right now, but you know you're feeling something, right? So I think that's why we hesitate sometimes to say or recognize that I'm feeling envy, I'm feeling jealousy, because we realize it's actually, when you zoom in, it's a plethora of different emotions, right? And because of the negative connotations, that's the last one we're going to grab. Because that also sometimes doesn't fully encapsulate what's going on in our hearts. So I do think, when it comes to identifying it within yourself, you also do have to accept that, one, because this is complex, if somebody is feeling this emotion towards me, I actually have to give them some kind of empathy towards the fact that they're feeling something complex as well. So yeah, I think it goes both ways. But one of the things that sometimes isn't afforded to women is, when we're called jealous, people don't see behind that and see that actually there is a lot
going on
behind that feeling, right? Which means that you can't just approach it with the, oh, that's just a bad person. No, that's actually just a human. Like I think covetousness or comparison or jealousy or envy or just wanting what your friend has or your neighbor has or what people have is actually a very kind of natural proclivity human beings have, right? We tend to sway to that direction because of survival, right? If you have something, I should have it too. And if you have it, does that, is that a threat to me having it? Like it's kind of human instinct. So I think it's one of those emotions we have to keep a close eye on, because no matter how good of a person you are, you are still inclined sometimes to becoming jealous if you do not do the work to sway yourself in the opposite direction when you do inevitably compare yourself, because comparison and competition is inevitable. It's absolutely inevitable. In the world we live in the way it's set up, comparison is fueled by everything. Right, it's likes on Instagram and those metrics, it's league tables at university. Like when we were at uni, they used to put the league not the league tables, the like the scorings on exams,
how everybody
performed in the order in which they performed, right? So already you can see like life sets you up for competition. And so if you aren't careful and you just allow yourself to kind of go with the flow of life, you will find yourself comparing yourself to people, and then that natural inclination for jealousy will arise. However, you kind of have to train yourself intentionally to sway the other way, because it's not that comparison won't happen, it's now what do you let that fuel. And that's what we get into in that chapter in our book, which is actually comparison is not the issue, it's what you allow it to drive you to that is the problem.
I love that.
Jeez,
hook, line, sinker. Love it. No, I love everything that you said. I think two points that resonated for me: the complexity of jealousy, right? The fact
real
that
complex emotion.
Oh man, there's a whole bunch of things going on, right? Like in life in general, and jealousy can arise as just one of the emotions that you're feeling, when especially when you're in close proximity to someone that you find yourself comparing yourself to, it can be really tough, because at the same time you're jealous but you're also really happy for them, but at the same time you're jealous, or you know, there's certain things that are going on, and whilst you have the capacity to, you know, experience that joy, you're still thinking, ah, goodness me, but what about me?
What about me?
Exactly. And I also love what you were saying about how jealousy can often shine a light on the things that are going on with ourselves, right? So what are some of the deep set insecurities that we have? And I think some of those insecurities, they're both internal and externally motivated, right? So we have the internal kind of insecurities that we cultivate ourselves, but then also the external insecurities that are cultivated by society, by culture, by this satellite community that we have now grown into as a result of social media. And I think that's particularly pertinent for women, because competition is often seen as, like, I think especially for like minoritized groups or groups that have experienced some kind of marginalization from society, there is this sense of scarcity. And I think for women, there's competition because there's a feeling that not everybody can succeed at that particular level, right? And I think that insecurity of not being able to succeed, that insecurity that is being cultivated and fueled by the external stuff of like society, but then also internally, how do I fit into that, can be really, really tough. So thinking about insecurities, thinking about our interactions as women with our internal insecurities, and then also the insecurities that are pushed onto us by society, right? How do we manage that gap between jealousy and then what jealousy fuels, right? Because it's one thing to be jealous because of all of these things and all of these forces that are in this melting pot of envy, jealousy, comparison, all that kind of stuff, right? It's one thing to recognize the internal feeling, but then it's another thing for it to be made manifest in a fruit. So for some people, they're jealous and then they now start to ostracize themselves from their friends. Or for some people, they're jealous and they start to self-sabotage. And for some people, it's actually sabotaging their friends.
Absolutely.
How do we ensure, or how do we like start that work of training ourselves so that our jealousy doesn't manifest in actual threats to the people around us?
I think you have to first recognize what is going on, right? Like, okay, let me acknowledge that I actually am comparing myself to this person, first of all, and it is fueling in me jealousy. Like it is fueling in me a bit of a sense of I'm uneasy with this situation. And that may not necessarily mean I don't want this person to have what they have. So I now need to identify, what does it mean? What has been triggered in me? Is it that I do want what they have? Is it that this has reminded me that I don't have what I want? Is it that this has told me I need to go harder? Is this that this is telling me that I am not doing enough? Like, what is this? What has this triggered and spiraled in my heart to start thinking about myself and about my life? Once you come to terms with those truths, I think they actually give you a really natural indication to what it is you should do. Now, this doesn't mean that the jealousy will go away because now you've identified what's at the root of it. It's just like, okay, cool. If this is telling me I feel like they're ahead of me, why do I feel like I'm behind, right? Is it because I feel like I lack something? Is it because I feel like I've made some wrong decisions? Is it simply because I have a, not simply, but is it because I have a scarcity mentality and now I feel like because this person has won this or done this, I am not going to get it? And I think deal with that mindset issue, deal with that source. If it is that like you have a scarcity mentality because of your childhood and your upbringing, and maybe competition was something that you experienced between your siblings or in school, or your parents, you feel like your parents pitted you against other people, or maybe you grew up like in poverty and now you're thinking like the world lacks abundance for people. Maybe that's a sign that you need to go to therapy, because there are some this is not an issue with this person and their win. Anyone's win is gonna trigger you, right? Especially if it's in line with what it is you desire for yourself. So maybe this is something you want to verbalize to people. But I think once you acknowledge what has this triggered in me, you'll then know, okay, now I know what it is I need to deal with. It could also be that this has reminded you that actually I'm not going hard enough because I'm not doing what it is I said I do. And I think that's a part of the jealousy envy scale that we don't sometimes acknowledge, which is that comparison can sometimes actually be a positive fuel, right? Which is competition.
Yeah, you need to get on your Zoom.
Absolutely. And I think some of us are like, oh my gosh, no, don't compare yourself to anybody. But like I said, sometimes it's not about some, you can't control comparison sometimes. It's inevitable. I think it's now allowing that to push you towards, okay, actually I'm inspired. And I think in our book that
In the book
there is a scale and like this thing that lets you know there are actually two directions and two options, two paths that you can take, sorry, when you start to feel comparison. And one can actually move you towards a positive direction and the other can leave you towards a negative direction. And the positive direction is, once you feel comparison, it actually can inspire you, and that inspiration can allow you to kind of look at your own plan, look at your own strategy and your own vision and think, wow, how can I implement what my friend has done in this case, to now allow myself to progress further? Because I do think And I've said this before, when you are around people who are amazing, they're gonna do amazing things. And so if you continually allow yourself to be triggered and think, no, like, why are they doing amazing things above me? Do you want worse friends?
Yeah. She said, do you want some bottom barrel? Do you know what I mean? People?
Like, not even in that way, but like, why are you shocked that the people you've been supporting, the people you've been praying for, the people you've been rooting for are winning? Have you not been all moving in this direction regardless?
You know what I mean? And I think
that's what I mean. It's funny. I was having, when I was on that TBN recording about female friendship, that was one of the things one of the guests says, Sarah Longe. She was like, you've prayed with this person and now they've got what you guys were praying for. And it kind of triggered in my mind that sometimes our prayers are conditional, right? Which is, God bless my friend only if you bless me first. And that's not how prayer works. That's not how praying with in agreement with somebody works. That's not how rooting for your friends work. It's I'm praying that, or I'm hoping that you get what it is you, I feel like you deserve and what I want for you, even if I don't get it at the same time. Because the issue isn't that I don't think I'll get it, it's that I want it to happen either before you or at the same time as you. And if yours happens before me and a long period of time goes, I'm going to be stuck in a state of unworthiness. That's really deep and complex. Do you get what I mean? So I think you have to allow yourself to be inspired by your friends, but not desire to have exactly what they have at the same time. But I think if you are surrounded by really great people, you can choose to be inspired by what it is they do. And that allows you to refocus on your own path. That allows you to think about, okay, so what am I going to do now? Not to get one up on them, but actually there's something they've done that's worked, or there's something that there's a new fire within me to keep going on my journey. Because it's also that sometimes your friends aren't necessarily pursuing the same path as you, but they've gotten something great and you just want that feeling of celebration as well. But I think most times the feelings of jealousy come up when we feel like somebody's getting a bit too close to our lane. And so allow yourself to realize, no one can actually step on your toes. No one can actually be on the exact same path that you are on, because the story that God is writing with you is different. Right? No matter how similar you think it is, no matter how much you feel like, oh, this is exactly what I should have been doing. Absolutely not. You cannot be anybody else, and you need to remind yourself that you're not living in anybody's shadow. And I think that's the fear a lot of us have, that we will be overcast by our friend's success. Absolutely not. If you are on your own path, nobody can overshadow you. Nobody can rob from you what God has for you, as long as you're doing the work for yourself and on your own journey. And so acknowledge that times and seasons differ per person. And I think that's another mindset shift. Times and seasons. You and your friends are not going to be going through the same season at the same time all the time. It may feel like, oh, but we've been grinding with each other. Okay, but your season of success may come earlier than mine. Or your season of fruit may come earlier than mine. But it doesn't mean my seeds in the ground aren't sprouting. It's just clear to us now that they are different seeds. And that's okay. That is actually all right. Embrace that.
I love that. The acknowledgement of the different seeds is so important. And I think just taking that pause between the emotion and the action, because I think sometimes we can be so quick to realize the emotion, right? It's like, oh, I feel jealous, I'm gonna act. And it's like, no, taking the time to process that this is how I'm feeling, as you were saying earlier, is so important. Because once you've identified, labeled and named the thing, then the thing loses its power over you, and then you can dictate, how do I want this to be meted out? I think was just so good, so important, man. And it's tough. It's really, really tough when you are in close proximity to somebody, somebody that you've been rooting for. And I love what you were saying about acknowledging there are some of us that will be praying for, supporting our friends, but it's conditional on whether our prayers are answered, right? Or this idea of being in close proximity with someone, growing with them, seeing them, being a part of their journey, there's almost a little bit of shame that can be attached when it feels like they're progressing ahead of you, right? We're coming from the same place. And I think that's why a lot of people on the, like, the other side are always like, oh, you know, crabs in a bucket mentality, you know, people are just really mad that I'm doing better than them and all that kind of jazz. But there is a shame that's attached on the other side of, we're coming from the same place, surely I should be getting a little bit further ahead. Or if we're running this race,
race.
If we're running this race together, then surely we should be finishing together, or surely we should be finishing strong. And it's that acknowledgement that we're actually in different races. We may be running together, but we're not in the same lane. And that's okay if, you know, you're getting a little bit further ahead, or maybe you're taking a different path. I think it's that togetherness and very much allowing yourself to continue to run, but at the same time, still fertilizing each other's soil. So important. Lest you think that there isn't enough space for both of you to really to really grow. When you think of like a flower bed, for example, right? There's two roses or different flowers in a flower bed, right? The capacity for somebody's lily to grow and all that kind of jazz is not dependent or contingent on a rose elsewhere to grow as well. So it's understanding that there's so many nutrients and there's so many available opportunities or things that you need to be able to grow together, as opposed to thinking that you're constantly fighting for space, constantly fighting for all of the other nutrients that you need to be successful. So it's a tough one. It's an actual tough one. Another thing that I wanted to talk about really briefly is comparison, jealousy, envy, specifically for women. So when we think about like comparison, competition, and men, some of the popular narratives around kind of male communities can be, you know, competition is good for men. It's a natural facet of testosterone. It's an opportunity for them to turn into the man that they're going to become and all that jazz. But there's almost a backlash that women get when they are painted as or perceived as the jealous one, the envious one, the one that's comparing. And yet it's almost inevitable because society tends to pit women against each other. So I would love to hear your thoughts on what are some of the differences between the way that we see comparison and competition for men versus comparison and competition for women.
Yeah, I think one, there's a lot of scarcity for women. Like we're we're competing for men, we're competing for jobs, we're competing for leadership roles, we're competing to be the most like that woman that everyone looks at as, that's the woman that you need to follow, you know, that's the epitome of femininity or whatever. And not everyone can be that. Not everyone can be the prize example, right? There can only be one champion when actually there's so much beauty in our diversity.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
And one of the issues with, you know, the objectification of women throughout history is there's this agenda of the universal standard for women that should be aspired towards. And so when you divert from that, when you don't want that, when you are doing something else, it's kind of like, oh, you're not, that's not womanly, or that's not admirable. And so I think for us, it's just kind of divesting from that. As women, we don't all want the same thing, and that's okay. As women, we're not all going to be the same, and that's okay. We're not going to talk the same, we're not going to act the same, dress the same, look the same. It's just embracing our uniqueness and realizing that each of us is still beautiful, powerful in our own right, no matter the path that we are walking in, right? And don't allow people to pit you against other women as, you know, this person does this or this person acts like this. Okay, that's them, I'm me. And really be radical in your pursuit of that. Like, what do I like? Who do I want to be? Not what are people telling me I should be? Like, no, who do I actually want to be? Embracing your uniqueness and really pursuing it is really important, I think, in your womanhood journey. I think with men, though, competition is kind of painted as, competition is something they're taught from a young age, right? When you think about like athleticism and sports and stuff like that, like competition seems to be a natural part of masculinity and the male experience. Do you get what I mean? Like playing sports, competitive sports at that, it kind of is a, like we were saying before, a positive fuel. It's a driver to be a better person. And I think something like that already has its own drawbacks. Like when we look at toxic masculinity and stuff like that, like this constant comparison is also not healthy. However, I do think it's one, a hormonal thing sometimes with testosterone. However, I do think when you are taught that, okay, be competitive and you can, especially through sports, sorry, I think you are taught through that, that competition is a mechanism for just your own betterment. Mm-hmm. But women aren't necessarily taught that. Competition is about survival, right? Competition is about being the object of that one man's affection. Whereas with men, I tend to see, and with sports in general, to be quite stereotypical, competition is just about you getting better as a sportsman. Your competition is not necessarily against that person and their entire existence. It's against their sportsmanship. It's against their skill, right? And so you now go and shoot in the gym. You now go and do the things you need to do to become a better sportsman, to really fulfill your potential. And I think there's that harrowing on, yet there's a potential in you that you really need to sharpen. Whereas women aren't taught to fulfill their own potential. It's just try and be this ideal woman, try and be that person. Do you know what I mean? So it's very external versus internally motivated. So I think external motivations is what is killing our people when it with fellow women when it comes to becoming better, right? You're fueled by, I want to be like this person. It's even like with social media consumption and just marketing in general, you see an image and you're taught, be this person, versus when you're a, when you're taught competition from the athletic sense, you're taught, oh, become better from the inside out, right? Become better, reach your full potential, go and do the work to do that, and so that you can perform and get acknowledged for your skill, right? Versus other people's judgment of you, be a champion. And I think that that's why competition is quite healthy for men, because the view is, this is actually helping me to reach my fullest potential, my unique, almost genetic potential, and then kind of compound that with my own efforts. Whereas with women, it's, I'm still seeking validation, even in the betterment of myself. I need to do it to seek validation, validation from other women, and validation from men, and the validation from society that I am a good mother, a good wife. It's all external from us. And so when we do try to reclaim, like we were saying, like I was saying, our own uniqueness and make our validation internal, we are seen as such radical feminists and actors of resistance, when actually we just want to be ourselves, and we want to be okay with loving ourselves and that being enough. Yeah,
absolutely adore that, man. Couldn't agree more. I think especially with the messaging point, right? Like, what are the messages that we're telling men and women when it comes to comparison? For men, it's, okay, we're comparing you so that you can get better. For women, it's, you're not good enough and you need to match up to a particular mark.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think, off of your point earlier, when you were mentioning this idea of unworthiness, it's almost as though society pits women together to create this sense of unworthiness, this sense of, in order to be desirable, there are certain hoops that you have to go through in order to be validated externally. And that's such an important point, right? Like, where does our motivation come from? Where is the validation coming from? I think there's a real internal sense of achievement when competition is seen as a positive driver, right? Where you win the game, and yes, there's the external validation, but there's a lot of just joy and happiness at being able to achieve the thing. Whereas I think with a lot of women, it's the external validation so I can actually just be accepted and function in society. And one of the points that I actually wanted to bring up was, what are some of the things that women often compete for? And you put it so beautifully, right? We're competing for romantic relationships. We are competing for this being seen by society as caregivers. We're competing for a lot of things that are often marketed as being in scarce resources, right? And it's also not a coincidence that we're competing for things that require external validation, that require society to look upon us and say, ah, you're a good woman,
yeah.
as opposed to us being able to cultivate or gain these things by ourselves to be able to define what kind of woman that we want to be. Even when I think about masculinity, gaining money is often an endeavor that you can do internally or at least by yourself. But gaining the favor of men for romantic relationships requires you to, you know, do a lot of things in order to change yourself so that you can be seen by men as desirable and attractive. And I think it's a shame that we are often competing for things that are contingent on other people or contingent on society, which means that it's a lose-lose situation.
Absolutely.
So even the feelings of like jealousy and comparison can often intensify as a result of that, yeah. because we are competing for things that are outside of our control.
Yeah.
Competing for things that, listen, I can't control how, how this guy sees me. Do you know what
Absolutely.
I mean? And then even worse is when jealousy and envy turns into us coveting things, mm-hmm. like actual things that we can't have. Mm. So thinking about like the taboo stuff of coveting somebody else's partner, coveting somebody else's life. How do we as women overcome the very real possibility of jealousy, envy, and comparison turning into us coveting or even making a beeline for things that are not our own?
You have to catch it early. You have to catch it early. Like, I think the more you let this feeling fester, mm-hmm. The more likely you are to cross lines,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
When you do not regulate yourself internally and adopt a self-awareness and do the, you know, sit down with yourself in your bedroom sometimes and just journal out your feelings.
Yeah.
I think it's, sometimes we feel like it's so taboo, we don't want to verbalize it or we don't want to write it down and externalize it from us so we can really look at what we're dealing with. However, if you don't do that, it will simply fester. It doesn't remove it from inside of you. Just because you haven't acknowledged it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And if you don't acknowledge it and deal with it early, it will continue to grow, right? Suddenly you build up resentment for your friend. And now that resentment for your friend has become a disregard for their boundaries, a disregard for their safety, and you honoring your relationship with them, and that makes you less worried about crossing the boundaries, right? If I don't like you anymore, taking your partner doesn't matter. Do you get what I mean? Like, and it's not that I don't like you, but deep down, I have lost my honoring of you. I've lost my respect of you. I've lost my love for you. That's may have stopped me from doing these things in the first place. So I think the simple thing is catch it early. Like, really try your best to just confront, oh, I just had a thought, I don't like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, as soon as your friend does something and it makes you feel a little twinge in your heart, let's acknowledge what that is.
Yeah.
And let's move on from there. Because the more this seed gets to grow, the more it's going to take a hold of me.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting what you were saying about the comparison and like, competition element, because I think for women, because it is surrounding external validation, even when we win, it's never enough. We're constantly being told to be like someone else, be like something else. And a lot of it is, you know, linked to consumerism. Once you feel like you've reached the pinnacle of who you should be, then the standard actually changes. And now you have to go and buy a whole bunch of stuff, read a whole bunch of stuff to help you become someone new. And you're constantly reinventing yourself every 5 years. It's actually okay to just be you. However, I think that also sometimes makes us feel like we have to do everything possible, even if it's on the more negative side, to make sure that we are happy. Because the promise we're kind of given is once you reach this pinnacle, you'll be happy.
Yeah.
And then when we get there and we're not happy, we think there's actually more that I need to do, right? And so if we then see someone who is happy, and even if it's just perceived happiness, we think, okay, so I need exactly what they have, right? That it's no longer about having my version of happiness.
Yeah.
It's about having exactly what they have so I can be truly happy. So I think when you allow the feeling to grow and fester within you and you don't really deal with what's going on beneath that surface, you're more inclined to cross some lines. And sometimes it's not even doing the obvious taboo things. Oh, I stole her boyfriend.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's you said something about her that you would never have said if you weren't dealing with this emotion, right? Or you find yourself kind of disrespecting your friend. Well, they're not all that good anyway. Mm. Do you get, like, mm-hmm. all these feelings of, ooh, somebody who I love, somebody who I've committed myself to be friends with, sisters with, how can I say this? Yeah. Or even say it in my own heart, like just the thought about them, you know? It's dangerous. And so when you catch yourself doing that, just realize that I'm not even being the person who I really want to be. Do you get what I mean? I'm not even being supportive. I'm not being a sister. I'm being quite vicious right now. And I think these things are all natural. Like they can happen, but just because it's natural doesn't make it okay.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? Just because like, yes, these, and I think that's one of the main things people talk about when they're talking about jealousy. It's like, oh, jealousy is actually a natural human feeling. Absolutely. Absolutely. However, jealousy can drive you to do some very bad things.
Very bad.
And so
things.
If you allow this very normal feeling to just lay dormant because, oh, it's normal, you're gonna end up doing something very bad.
Yeah.
And that's how people end up in prison. I'm genuinely being honest. I think we forget that, like, envy, comparison, all of that can lead you on a very bad spiral towards murder.
Hey.
It can.
There you have it, folks.
It really can.
If you don't want to end up on an episode of Criminal Minds, literally, or BBC Panorama.
Exactly. Like, next thing you're on the evening news. And I know a lot of us think like, oh no, it can never get that way. But I think we forget how all consuming these emotions can
be. For sure.
Like anger, rage, jealousy, your own insecurity, your own fear can completely consume you. 100. And before you know it, you're acting in a way you don't even recognize. You're saying things you don't even recognize. You're looking at your friend in a way that is so, I don't know if you've ever like, if you've ever really truly been like jealous or envious of someone and you've let it grow over time, simply seeing that person can make you roll your eyes so far into the back of your head that you get stuck. Like you get so, like your body starts to manifest that this person gets on my absolute nerves. Who do they think they are? All these thoughts. And it's like, wow, this is someone I used to love. And they haven't done anything. All they've done is shine. And you think that that kind of emotion won't lead to you doing an absolute madness.
I'm telling you, that is a gateway for the enemy. In fact, the enemy has already penetrated
Your heart. And it just reminds me of like Cain and Abel. And that's why I say like, as much as it's natural, like it's one of the earliest issues we see dealt with, like in the Bible.
Yeah.
It's not something you should allow to lay dormant. Like when Cain and Abel go to offer their sacrifices to God and God acknowledges one and he doesn't acknowledge the other, Cain's fury is not at the fact that his offering wasn't the best that he could give and recognizing for himself, like, actually, maybe I didn't do good enough in this area. Mm-hmm. But it was actually towards his brother's acceptance. Yeah. It was towards the fact that his brother was like, why is it not me?
Mm-hmm.
And what God tells him is sin is crouching at the door of your heart and its desire is to have you. Like its desire is to consume you. And I think we deal with jealousy sometimes too lightly.
Yeah.
And this is why it's important to have conversations like this, because it makes us confront an emotion that needs to be confronted, but we deal with it too lightly, thinking that our jealousy is doing something to the object of our jealousy when actually its desire is to have you.
Right.
Its desire is to have your future, right? Like you feel allowing this to fester and grow is only going to destroy your life. Yes, Abel died, but Cain's life was destroyed.
And his whole bloodline.
His whole bloodline. Do you get what I mean? All of them were consumed by the same issue. They became actual tyrants to society to the point where God was like, I need to kill all of humanity because these men are wilding. Do you get what I mean? And so whilst you may feel like this jealousy will hurt this person, it's going to hurt you much worse. It will do you much, much worse. And if you don't deal with it, your whole life will be consumed.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, man. Your whole life, your generation
will be consumed.
We don't want to, what do you call it, fearmonger or anything like that and say that your bloodline is going to be cursed or anything like that. However,
absolutely not. It's down to you.
However, exactly. It's down to you and understanding that emotions are often a gateway to things that are either much worse or much better.
Yeah.
Right. When we think about something like jealousy, I love that you touched on the fact that jealousy can be something that is all consuming. And oftentimes we don't pick it up before it consumes us, right? It's almost like you light a fire, you light a match, and then immediately it's set ablaze. And then everything that another person does, the person that's supposed to be your friend, the person that's supposed to be your sister, is contributing fuel all of a sudden. The way that you're perceiving them shining, I love the fact that you said shine. Like our friends are born to shine. Yeah. And as sisters, it's something that we talk about in the book, as sisters, our responsibility is to ensure that they can shine the brightest. What can I do to support this person? You then can't turn around and allow that shine to fuel the fans and fan the flames of your jealousy, because soon enough, you're going to become the obstacle, the ditch, the roadblock. There is, I am sure, a litany of friendship graves that started with the fire of jealousy.
Yeah, absolutely.
A litany of friendships that have died because of undealt with jealousy or undealt with envy.
Mm.
And I love the fact that you were talking about the fact that it starts in the heart. Like, too many of us are catching jealousy too late. Mm. We are catching it, I probably shouldn't have said that, or I probably shouldn't have done that. And I just let it get the best of me. It should have stopped at the beginning. It really is a gateway. Like, we really need to, when it comes to checking your heart and actually doing the work, that consistent work of renewing your mind and actually sitting with yourself, what is my heart saying today? But what is my heart saying in reference to my friend?
Yeah.
What is my heart saying about my friend, concerning my friend? And I think so many of us, because we don't think of our friends like that, we only think of our friends when they have pricked us or they've annoyed us or they've gingered us at its extremes, that we're not constantly doing a work of renewing our minds concerning our friendships, right? Like, what is my heart towards this person? Have I prayed for this person? Have I asked them, you know, how they're doing? I think it's even that, right? Actually being a friend is often one of the best ways you can prevent yourself from turning into their enemy, right? Like, oftentimes jealousy, comparison, and envy creeps in when you have distance.
Mm.
It's very difficult to be envious of someone when you're very close to them. And I think sometimes jealousy can shine a light on the fact that we're lacking in intimacy. Because I love what you were talking about in terms of perceived happiness, right? There's so many people that we have in our lives that we look at them and we think they're happy, right? But the reality of journeying with someone is you really understand what they're going through in the midst of their happiness. Happiness and sadness, or happiness and suffering, are often hand in hand. We see the two at the same time, right? And there are so many people that are, you know, going through, for example, the engagements, but are going through turmoil and they need their sisters.
Yeah.
There are so many people that have been promoted to excellent jobs, but are now dealing with the reality of their schedule changing. It's tough. They need a sister. There are so many people that are dealing with the beauty of having a kid, but are waking up at 2-3 a.m. in the morning, they're tired. And I feel like too many of us are allowing ourselves to be distant from our friend. And I think that's one of the biggest snares of the enemy, right? Is to isolate us. So I think if you are dealing with envy, jealousy, comparison, especially with someone that's your friend, I think it's indicative of the fact that you lack intimacy, that you lack covering, that you lack closeness, because I believe it is genuinely impossible for you to be envious of someone when you see them truly for what they're going through or who they are. And I think that's actually an opportunity for you to touch base with that person.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Yeah.
Are you okay? Like, as much as you are killing it right now, what's going on right now? Where can I actually support? Where can I even pray for you, right? Because your prayers shouldn't just be about God, bless them, but it should also be about covering them. It should also be about supporting them. It should also be about standing in the gap, because with every elevation, with every opportunity that God brings your friend, there is a snare that's also waiting for them. So it's better that you are the prayer against the snare than becoming the snare, because there's too many people that have become the snare because they weren't covering, they weren't watching, right? When we look at how many times, even in the Bible, that the enemy has used the people that are in closest proximity to us to ruin us. I think the classic example is Judas, right? And I think what was very interesting about, like, even the Last Supper and all that kind of stuff was the fact that all of the disciples were like, is it I, Lord?
Is it I, Lord?
That means the people that are closest to us have the greatest capacity to be used as devils in our lives. They have the greatest capacities to do us under. And if you're not constantly checking your heart, if you're not constantly in close proximity with the people that you're meant to be covering, you are going to be the one that trips them up the hardest.
Absolutely.
The
you're
hardest.
So right. You're so right.
Jealousy, man.
Mm-hmm.
Before we kind of talk about all the positive stuff and the exciting, how do we be friends and all that kind of jazz, I know we've spoken about comparison within the context of our friendship, but I actually wanted us to speak about comparison in other friendships or other dynamics or just across the span of our lives. Have you ever experienced comparison, whether it is you comparing yourself or other people comparing yourself to other people around you, and have there been any moments where you feel like, oh, I've actually fallen short of the mark here in being a friend? Or are there any areas, or were there any times where you were like, oh man, I wish I hadn't let that get the best of
yeah,
me?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, so many. Like, I think if you listen to my episode with my sister, mm-hmm. I think we talked about it a lot. Like, we grew up kind of feeling this constant comparison to one another that led to a lot of resentment and distance in our relationship, because it just felt like neither of us was ever good enough. And I think that that was probably the greatest struggle within our relationship that really hindered our sisterhood for years. And so a part of me was kind of, you know, even through that episode, reflective of how many years that robbed of us of just being really close friends. Like, yeah. We just grew up as sisters, but not necessarily as friends. And so I wish I hadn't have given those years over to that emotion and that feeling, which was, like I said, extremely complex. I think also growing up, like, being a very high achiever, yeah. a lot of it can be fueled by constant comparison. Like, the real indicator that you are doing well is how well you're doing compared to the next person, right? Yeah. That is the benchmark. Are yeah. you the best? It's not necessarily about getting 100%. It's about getting the highest grade in your class comparison yeah. to other people. So I think growing up as a high achiever, yeah. it was just, a lot of it was, how am I doing in comparison to other people? And mm-hmm. I think the education system sometimes does it to us. Like, they give more attention and more care to the people yeah. who are performing best. And so when you feel like you also want that acknowledgement and that praise from people, just as an innate human desire, your eye is constantly on, wow, if I don't constantly achieve better than people, I'm going to be relegated to the side, right? And so that has also been, just throughout my educational journey, something in the back of my head has always been, outperform people. Yeah. Don't just perform well, you have to outperform people. Yeah. Which, I mean, it worked out well to some degree, but it also meant that I was training myself. Yeah. I was training my yeah. mind, training my heart, training my performance mm-hmm. to be about comparison to other people. Mm-hmm. And so now, being in a very unconventional career path mm-hmm. of, you know, being self-employed, running a company and stuff like that, sometimes your only reference point comes through comparison. Yeah. It's not just about comparing yourself to, you know, success and the blueprints ahead of you, but also just your peers, right? Like mm-hmm. the real measure of success becomes how well are my friends doing, and how well am I doing in comparison to that yeah. versus, oh, you know what, because you don't know what your path looks like. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, in that uncertainty, in the face of that uncertainty, and sometimes in the midst of those insecurities, I have found myself just comparing myself, just blazingly comparing myself to other people who are on similar journeys as me, or even completely different ones, but are around the same age as me.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm constantly talking about, like, oh, the spirit of my age mates and yeah. blah, 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 because that's one of the ways we kind of train ourselves in comparison. You know, what are people around me doing by this age, by this time, yeah. at this stage? Yeah. And am I there? And it's kind of like, you can't always use other people as a benchmark for your success and hold on to that as the only metric for how well you're doing. Mm. I'm not going to say, like, oh, completely stop comparing yourself to people, because, like I said, sometimes that can be fuel for a healthy kind of competition, which yeah. leads to success. However, the more you allow that to be your main metric, the more you train yourself in something which is quite unhealthy, but also quite hard to unlearn. Like, despite knowing all of this stuff, I still find myself kind of falling into very similar trains of thought mm-hmm. around, like, comparing myself and trying to figure out, oh my gosh, am I actually being successful, and all of that stuff. So yeah, that's me. How about you?
Yeah, I think very similarly, if not exactly the same. Definitely comparison with my sisters, but interestingly, we would be compared around, like, certain metrics, like, oh, you know, Renee's the eldest and all that kind of stuff. But for me, comparing the way that my parents dealt with them versus how they dealt with me,
yeah.
and actually wishing that I was dealt with more like a child.
Yeah.
Like, I wishing that I could also be, you know, the youngest and all that yeah. kind of jazz. I think also similarly, educationally, right, been trained pretty much all my life to not just compare, but compete and outperform everyone.
Like,
you have to be at the top.
Absolutely.
And then I think even stepping back more further, society and, you know, coming from migrant family, you have to work harder than everybody else.
Absolutely.
So not even just like your age mates, not even just folks that are like within similar cultures to you, but you have to be better than everyone because your livelihood is actually dependent on it, right? And that whole sense of scarcity as well, right? Like you have to, you actually have to be at the top. There is no other place or position that you can play. So even in terms of like good sportsmanship, I'm happy that we brought up the, obviously we're talking about men competing and athleticism and all that kind of stuff. But the danger of extreme comparison and extreme competition is that you will never enable yourself to be second best.
Yeah,
and you will
never
allow yourself to be in any position that is not the top spot.
Never good enough.
Which is really unhealthy because sometimes it's necessary for you to be third, fourth, fifth. But when you're constantly in environments, and I feel like that really was my experience, you're constantly in environments where you have to be at the top. It becomes unsustainable and it becomes extremely problematic when you don't know how to play a game where you come second place. You don't know how to play a game where you're third or fourth or fifth. Only know a game where you have to be on top. Exactly. So that means everyone is a threat. Everybody is a danger. And the scarcity mentality that the top can only be occupied by one person. Tragedy. Actual tragedy. So for me, it was unlearning that, right? That the top spot isn't just one for number one. It can be 10 for number one. But equally, it's actually okay for me to be in second place or third place.
Yeah.
It's actually okay for, you know, in different seasons of my life to actually be on the bench or sidelines.
Yeah,
and even that, right? Constantly feeling like I have to play, like I always have to be on the pitch.
That's deep.
Not every football player has to be on the pitch
every time.
Do you know what I mean? So growing up in environments educationally, but also culturally, where always have to be on the pitch.
Yeah, and you really see it as an indication of like your own value and self-worth, right? Like the idea of being in the reserves or like, okay, I'm not on the, like, I think of when you were talking, I was thinking of a football team. And I remember having a conversation whilst watching a football match with my dad. And he was just like, oh, this person needs to be on the pitch and this person needs to be on the pitch. And I'm like, well, if those are their best players, why are they not on the pitch? And it's like, because not everyone can play at the same time. Sometimes there's only 11 players on the pitch. And so sometimes even the best players need to sit in the reserves.
Yeah.
They're going to be sitting, watching the game play. And whilst they could be thinking, I'm better than this player, I should be playing, coach put me in, manager put me in, it's not your time to play. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's why, and the reason why that can be so harsh is then you see it as, why am I being benched? Like, I'm better than people. And all of this. And it's like, it's not a reflection of your gameplay. It's not a reflection of your self-worth. But to some degree, sisterhood is a team sport,
exactly.
Right? Like you're betting on the team winning. Like you kind of have to think quite selflessly. And so sometimes you're the gatekeeper, but you have to be okay with the fact that this is my teammate's time to shine. I'm gonna sit on the bench. Do you get what I mean? And it's not a reflection of me not being good enough, me not being needed in this game, or me not succeeding. I'm gonna get paid regardless.
Listen,
do you get what I mean?
And but they get paid the same amount too.
But they need to go out there and score their goals too. So let me just sit down.
And also understanding that sometimes it's preparing you or preparing your time to shine, right?
Like
even with the football analogy, that's really giving athleticism. Love it for us. Guys, get us on those football podcasts. We'll be able to speak, yeah? What team do you support?
I'm not really like an avid supporter of anyone, but it's between Liverpool and Man United.
Fairs.
Yeah.
I would say Man United when I watch my like one game every 2 years.
Are you not an Arsenal fan?
Absolutely not. My brother is a Arsenal fan.
Oh, okay,
Arsenal
your brother
fan.
Is an Arsenal fan.
And then my father is a Tottenham fan.
Yeah, love you,
Dad. But with the like team sport, right, it's about strategy when you're playing team sports. I think it's definitely shifting out of that mindset that in this life, the game that I'm playing is just for me. As you were saying, sisterhood is a team sport. So we all need to win. And in order for us to win, we need to be strategic about who's on the pitch and when.
Yeah.
And sometimes them being on the pitch first means that you can shine on the pitch later, right? Because they've actually set you up for success.
Yeah.
And this is not to say that every single success that your sister has is just a setup for you, because that's definitely given narcissistic. But it's understanding that there is a certain level of grace, favor, and blessings that can be unlocked when you are in the midst of somebody that is shining right now. It's almost like a... whatever blessing I carry, you guys can have too. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
And also, like, a win for your sister is a win for the team, man. Honestly. Like, I think even on a more political level, like, seeing a woman win at something, seeing a Black woman win at something for us, like, seeing a woman who came from a similar background to us win, seeing a woman who's come from a single parent household win, like, all of that is like, that's a win for me. Like, it's an example that this is possible. And I think when you do see sisterhood as a team sport, with the women you're in intimate community with, you realize that a win for them is also a win for us.
Yeah.
And that is actually a really big deal.
Necessary.
Yeah.
Necessary. Yeah. A win is a win. Whether a win it's a win, win from a somebody win is a win. Else for us.
Love that.
Well, we are coming to the conclusion.
Yes.
The end of the episode. And very quick, like 60 seconds, Courtney, give us an exposition. Give us a ginger us a little bit. How do we overcome jealousy? And how do we root for our sisters in a healthy manner?
It takes time. Give yourself time. But start coaching yourself in, one, being supportive.
Yeah.
Two, recognizing where you're at and just being obsessed with your own progress, not at the expense of anyone else, not in comparison to anyone else, but just you focusing on doing you. Embrace your time and your season. Like, you're not going to be winning all the time, they're not going to be winning all the time. Sometimes you're going to be in the trenches together, sometimes there's going to be a difference in season, but that's okay. It's not reflective of your intrinsic self-worth. So also have an intrinsic foundation for who you think you are and what you believe yourself to be deserving of. But then also lastly, like, be supportive, cheer people on, and genuinely, it may feel fake at first, and that's actually completely fine, but train yourself in doing it. Train yourself in celebrating people, train yourself in showing up, train yourself in giving the congratulations, giving the flowers, being hella supportive. Yeah, it's training.
I love that.
Yeah.
I think what I would say is refuse to be used by the enemy, like, actually refuse to be used by the devil, and recognize his voice when he is using you.
Yeah.
That's very, very important. I would also say, similarly to you, where you can celebrate, celebrate people, because you don't know how much your celebration they need. It's necessary. And then lastly, if you can, collaborate.
Yeah,
like, actually find an opportunity to collaborate. It doesn't always have to be competition. It can actually be collaboration. Yes. And I think one of the best ways that you can overcome jealousy or even comparison is, how can I support this person and how can they support me so we can do this and win together?
That's good.
That's what I would say.
That's good.
But sisters, in this rife life full of all sorts of nonsense that we have to overcome, we are praying that you overcome jealousy, envy, and comparison. And we also pray that where comparison is, you know, encroaching your heart right now, where you are feeling as though you are missing the mark, we pray that you overcome those insecurities, that this will be a week where you will actually identify opportunities where you can continue to work on yourself, be a better person. We also pray that you have opportunities to celebrate a sister. In fact, as you are listening to this, go and celebrate somebody. Go and tell them well done on some of the things that they're doing. Go and encourage a sister, and I promise you, you will see the favor and blessings that come as a result of that. Go and encourage your sister. And for encouraging other people, you can encourage yourself. So we really pray that you also be able to regulate your emotions and that you'll be able to identify them and catch them before they turn into something dangerous.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Well, have an amazing week, man. Have an amazing week.
Follow us. Sure. All that jazz. Yeah. At To My Sisterhood, at CD Boateng, at Renee Kapuku. You know where to find us. Mailing list. If you don't want to be a jealous babe, then you should sign up to
the
that,
mailing list, tomysisters.com.
You know the jazz already. But other than that, sisters, we are wishing you so much love for this week. And as always, keep glowing and growing.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.